So Chris is going to speak now about our vision for 2026 at Hope, which is really exciting. So I'm going to pray that we hear God and are sensitized to our role or contribution within that, because it's our shared vision. Lord, I thank you so much that you work through the body. That's your plan A, and there isn't any other plan. You work through the body of Christ, and then in Christ, us, to bring about your reign on earth as it is in heaven. And we count it the greatest privilege to be a part of your body and to take our place with each other, standing side by side with each other, contributing to your vision coming on earth as it is in heaven. And so I bless us today to hear your voice for us personally and also corporately as to what you're saying to us about your plans and purposes for us as a community in 2026. Amen.
Thanks, Alice. Good morning, everyone. Hi, I'm Chris, and I'm a follower of Jesus. And Alice and I came to Bristol. I'd never been here in my life before, in 2002, 2003, because we heard of this new church that had started called Hope, and it was doing quite radical things. It was a building site at the time, which I love building sites, and it had these big dreams to reach out to people on the edge of society, to be a prayer centre for the city, and we just loved the engagement within the church, and that was our reason to come to Bristol back in 2002, 2003. And just love being part of this community ever since, and different times of growing in God in different ways and seeing God do different things. And excited to see what the future holds. I wonder, when was the last time that you felt you were out of your depth? When was the last time you felt like you needed God to come through for you? Otherwise, I don't know what. Yeah, I think for some people it might be like actually being here right now, or it could be it's an everyday thing. For others it might be actually I don't know, I felt pretty comfortable for a long time, and actually I don't know that I have been out of my depth for a while. I wasn't planning to say this now, but I think I'm planning to come onto land where I actually think we're designed to be out of our depth. I think that's actually the right place to be. In life. And as Alice said, speaking a little bit into some of our vision for this year, and we shared a few weeks ago a prophetic word which relates to this painting which is behind us. And a lady called Liz, who's been encouraging us prophetically for a while, shared this word with three elements for us for 2026 about going into deeper water. I'll explain that in a minute. So going further from the kind of safe place or place, going further from the church, actually sort of gathered church place, experiencing God's power and substance in that place that's further from the church. And the third aspect was us being more tightly knit together as a community so that there's no gaps, people aren't left out. And so I'm going to speak into the first bit of that today, and I think at other times in the next few months I'll speak into some of the other ones, but I'm wanting to speak about this thing about going into deeper water, going further from the sort of church. And we're going to do this by, I'm excited, Andy's going to share a story with us from Philippines, and I'm excited about that. But we're going to also go through a passage in the Gospels, in Matthew chapter 8, where we see Jesus leading his disciples into deeper water. And that's we'll kind of track through that. But first up, just you might be familiar with this picture behind us. This is Hope Chapel. As you can see, there's a river coming out of it. And it's based on Ezekiel 47, which is a prophecy to the people of Israel from the prophet Ezekiel. And it was basically showing the temple. And out of the temple flowed this river of life. And the river had these plants and trees and fruit. And the further away it got from the temple, the sort of more life there was coming to it. And so for a year or two, we kept on having people say, I've got a sense of God speaking Ezekiel 47 over Hope. This is your calling. They'd see Hope Chapel with water flowing out, like this. So hence we've painted it. Rebecca Stansbury started it off, and Bex has been painting this large version wonderfully. So I think for me it symbolizes the people and the place of prayer and worship. This is the source of our life, the source of our energy, the source of our power, our hope, and the expectation that as we live as the people of God, worshiping Jesus, lives oriented around Jesus, then actually things within us flourish, and there's an overflow of life which serves the city, the greater Bristol area, wherever we are in our communities, our workplaces. And that's kind of a vision, really, of who we are as a church and what we're about as Hope. We're expectant and believing that our contributions to society and life in every day, in the little whether they're mundane things or whether they're massive, great global policy changes, whatever it is, we are the salt and light which is bringing the life of Jesus. So Liz's word, the aspect was about, as you go further, and this is the same in Ezekiel 47, as you go further out from the temple, as you get into deeper water, so much so that your feet can't touch the bottom of the river, that's where there's a more significant encounter of power. And actually that's part of our calling on Hope, is to go to the edges and to go to places that are maybe further from God, places, people, and to push you. And so I want to speak a bit into that this morning. And so we're going to go through this passage. And as we do, there's two questions I'd love you to have in mind. What does it show us about the heart of Jesus, his passion and his priorities, his responses to situations? And secondly, what's the experience of the disciples as they go with Jesus? Because that could relate to us as we go with Jesus in this. So we're going to go to, if you want to find on your tables, there's a few Bibles in the same version, which is the NIV that I'm reading from. It's Matthew chapter 8. Lizzie can tell us a page number. Matthew 8. And we're going to start at verse 14. Page 972, if you've got one of the table Bibles. Okay. And before we're going to read from verse 14, Matthew chapter 8, verse 14. Before we do, I just want to say a little bit about the context. And so Peter and the other 12 disciples, or other 11 disciples who are with Jesus, they lived pretty sheltered lives, I reckon. And if this is Lake Galilee, is my hand here, and they lived over here, in this sort of top left-hand corner, is Capernaum, the town or village. And they kind of lived on the west side, over on this side here. And life for them would have been pretty local. I reckon in their village, they'd probably have known everybody. And they would probably have all, load of them would have been related, cousins and, second cousins, third cousins. They'd all have grown up together. Nowadays we have a lot of movement, don't we? People move between towns and cities and villages. They were much more stayed in the same place for generations. They'd have had the occasional trip down. Maybe some of them would have gone once a year, maybe two or three times a year down to Jerusalem, which is, what is that, about 60 miles? 70 miles? I don't know. So it's a bit of a journey. But I reckon other than that, they wouldn't have got out much. They'd have been pretty tight. And their lives would have been fishing, simple agriculture, sort of subsistence living. They would have spoken Aramaic. That was the language that they spoke. And so, and then they were also pretty religious people. They were really immersed. There's a lot of time in the scriptures and keeping these really tight law code that was part of the Jewish faith. So they wouldn't, really care about what they ate, about who they associated with. They wouldn't associate with people who weren't Jewish. They wouldn't associate with people who were, they wouldn't eat with other people who weren't Jewish. So really quite a sort of closed life. And that was the way they lived. And so we'll read from Matthew 8, verse 14. And so you can picture this. This is happening in the top left-hand corner of Lake Galilee, Capernaum, up there in this sort of villagey space. When Jesus came into Peter's house, he saw Peter's mother-in-law lying in bed with a fever. He touched her hand, and the fever left her, and she got up and began to wait on him. When evening came, many who were demon-possessed were brought to him, and he drove out the spirit with a word and healed all who were sick. This was to fulfill what was spoken through the prophet Isaiah. He took up our infirmities and bore our diseases. Sorry, I'm just seeing how much I'm going to read. When Jesus saw the crowd around him, he gave others to cross over to the other side of the lake. Then a teacher of the law came and said to him, "Teacher, I'll follow you wherever you go." Jesus replied, "Foxes have dens and birds have nests, but the Son of Man has no place to lay his head." Another disciple said to him, "Lord, first let me go and bury my father." But Jesus told them, "Follow me and let the dead bury their own dead." So life on the west side of the lake, top left corner, is going really well. There's really big crowds. People want to join Jesus. But we see something here about his priorities that we see quite often, in that he just leaves. Yes, things are going really well here. I'm having a really successful impact on this community, but actually I'm going to go somewhere else. And that's a familiar theme that we see as we read through the Gospels. Quite often Jesus will leave a crowd and say, actually, I'm going somewhere else. And we get the idea as we follow Jesus, and as we see in the book of John, John 5, Jesus says this thing, I do only what I see my Father doing. My work is to do the will of my Father and to finish. And you get the sense that he's always got his ear out on what's God the Father saying to him to do now. So he's not looking at his circumstances and not looking at the impact where he is. But you get the impression that he's probably the Father saying to him, actually, I want you to go across the lake. I've got something. I've got someone for you on the other side of the lake. So he and his disciples get into the boat. And they're gonna cross the lake here. And I just think this is a really big deal for those disciples. I wonder if they've ever been over to the other side of the lake before. They were fishermen, so they'd spent a lot of time in the water. But the area that they're going to is like a completely different environment. I was trying to think of examples. Would it be like someone from a Somerset village going to a night out in Las Vegas? I'm trying to picture, you know, what would be a sort of comparison type thing. Because on the other side, this Decapolis area is this kind of Greek and Roman big cities that would have been marked by sort of temples and sacrifices to all sorts of idols and all that sort of stuff going on. A big theatre. Roman power, Greek kind of liberality of life, all the sort of sexual ethics of the morality of the Jewish world were completely different in this space. So everything was completely different and would have been shocking to a Jewish person. I wonder if they'd ever been there. But they're going with Jesus. They're on this kind of Jesus mission. So surely this is all going to go really, really well. They get into the boat. Let's read from verse 23. Then he got into the boat, and his disciples followed him. Suddenly, a furious storm came up on the lake, so that the waves swept over the boat. But Jesus was sleeping. The disciples went and woke him, saying, "Lord, save us, we're going to drown." And I think there's an encouragement here, isn't there? Like, they're going on this special mission. They're leaving the comfort of their family home, where everything's going really well. And actually, it looks like they're all about to die. As we'll see in a minute, and as you probably know, it all ends pretty sweetly right here. But actually, there isn't a promise, I don't think, that things will always be easy for us when we follow Jesus leading to the edges. I was thinking of like Stephen, he was killed for his faith. Paul was put in prison, he was shipwrecked, people just stoned him to death. He was flogged, he was beaten multiple times. Peter and John, early miracle in Acts chapter 3, they heal a crippled beggar at the temple, and they're arrested. And you know, there's another pattern here, which I think should encourage us, is that as we go to the edge, and we face opposition, right, there's a question here: was this storm that kicks up? Was this like a spiritual thing for a sort of spiritual event confronting them for the breakthrough that they're going to see on the other side of the lake, or was it just a bad weather day? I don't really know. But nonetheless. They're not living in this sort of bubble of life is going to be sweet and easy. We're with Jesus. And yet at the same time, there is this protection. Jesus replied, "You have little faith. Why are you so afraid?" Then he got up and he rebuked the wind and the waves, and the water was completely calm. The men were amazed and asked, "What kind of man is this? Even the winds and the waves obey him." Now we're getting onto the other side of the lake. We're nearly there. We've already said that it's a real move out of their comfort zone. And we're going to see even more now as these village kids go to Las Vegas. So, verse 28, when they arrived at the other side in the region of the Gadarenes, also called Gerasenes in some places, and this is about, so we were up here, it's probably over here, on the sort of 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock sort of side of Lake Galilee. It's about 8 miles, so it's quite a long journey. That's probably like here to Portis, like the far side of Portishead. So it's a big lake. You wouldn't have seen the other side when you set out. It's a long way. It's a big storm. When they arrived at the other side in the region of the Gadarenes, two demon-possessed men coming from the tombs met him. So tombs were another thing that Jewish people always avoided. You don't go near dead bodies. You don't go near tombs. It makes you unclean, ceremonially unclean as a Jewish person. You don't go there. They were so violent that no one could pass that way. "What do you want with us, Son of God?" they shouted. "Have you come here to torture us before the appointed time?" Some distance from them, a large herd of pigs was feeding. Pigs, really unclean for Jewish people. Pigs are like the worst animal. You don't go near pigs at all. You avoid them. So you've got these protected village kids come from their safe enclave of family life, living with their grandparents and their parents and extended family, and they know everybody. And they've come across this torturous journey across the lake into really hostile territory. People don't speak the language. Everything is just filthy and polluting and offensive and vile. And they're in a graveyard. And there's mad people who are really deluded or just like destructive. And there's pigs. Everything is wrong. And yet, that's the place that Jesus takes them. And again, this is something that we see again and again and again. We see Jesus' heart of compassion is actually, I don't need to be hiding. He goes and touches lepers. Again, we can't really probably comprehend that in our society. Infectious, fatal skin disease that scars you for life and again makes you uncontactable with other people. He touches lepers. He goes and he touches a woman who's bleeding and bleeding for many years. Again, really ritually unclean. He goes and speaks to a Samaritan woman at a well. She's a Gentile. Again, she's considered the lowest of the low. She's had a sort of loose lifestyle because of her trauma that she's been through. But again, he shouldn't be talking with her, but he goes right to the edges every time. He heals the Roman centurions. How can you heal the servant of a Roman centurion? They are the brutal oppressor of the Jewish people. How can you do that? And yet Jesus goes there. And he takes his disciples with him. And what's lovely is we come on in a minute to see the impact of this mission where it looks like Jesus went across the lake. I mean, it's interesting. It says in here that there are two men, two demon-possessed men. In Mark and Luke, there's only one. There's quite a few of these confusing bits in the Bible where different people are telling the story. And I wonder why does one say there were two, one say there were one? Maybe one of them was the kind of main character. He was the dramatic one that was doing all the speaking and the other guy was just sort of hanging out with him. I don't know what the reason was. But in Matthew's gospel, there are two. Some distance from them, a large herd of pigs was feeding. The demons begged Jesus, "If you drive us out, send us into the herd of pigs." He said to them, "Go." So they came out and went into the pigs, and the whole herd rushed down the steep bank into the lake and died in the water. Those tending the pigs ran off and went into the town and reported all this, including what had happened to the demon-possessed men. Then the whole town went out to meet Jesus, and when they saw him, they pleaded with him to leave their region. That's a crazy response, isn't it? In Mark chapter 5, I like this bit in the Mark version. It's a lovely description of the man afterwards. So this is Mark 5:15. When they came to Jesus, they saw the man who'd been possessed by the legion of demons sitting there dressed and in his right mind. I just think that's so lovely for that man. You know, he'd been tortured for years and years and years, outcast from society, physically battered and in pain and presumably had this continual inner torment all the time. And I'll just read it again. When they came to Jesus, they saw the man who'd been possessed by the legion of demons sitting there dressed and in his right mind. And they were so struck by it, it says that they were afraid. Fear of God type moment. What's happened to this person? He's completely changed. And the impression is that Jesus, because after this he goes back again, the impression was that Jesus went across the lake just to do this. Made this long journey across the lake, through the storm, all the trauma of that, all the challenge of that, just to heal this one guy. And then it goes on in the Mark version, gives a bit more detail than we get in Matthew about what happens next. As Jesus was getting into the boat, the man who'd been demon-possessed begged to go with him. Jesus did not let him, but said, "Go home to your own people and tell them how much the Lord has done for you and how he's had mercy on you." So the man went away, and he began to tell in the Decapolis how much Jesus had done for him, and all the people were amazed. This is the first example of a missionary being sent out into Gentile territory, into like a non-Jewish area. And it was this man who'd been so tortured and so tormented in his experience. And he's sent out. And, you know, people that have written about this say, you know, it's unlikely that Jesus is a Jewish rabbi. If he'd gone into this Decapolis area, these 10 cities of Roman and Greek living, it's unlikely that a Jewish rabbi, Jesus, would have been accepted there. They would have like hated the Jewish people who looked down on them as being unclean and inferior. So Jesus is unlikely to have been welcomed, but initially at first. But Jesus sends this one man and he basically says, he doesn't tell him to go and plant a church. Just go and tell them what you've experienced. Tell them what you've seen. And we get some glimpses of the potential impact of that later on. Later on in the Gospels, we see that So Jesus feeds 5,000 people, and another time he feeds 4,000 people afterwards. And they reckon that was probably in the Decapolis region that happened in this same area. And the people that were those 4,000 were probably people that had heard the testimony of this man that had been healed. And it says that they were waiting for Jesus when he came. And there's another time a guy who's blind is healed by Jesus, and people are waiting for Jesus to come in the Decapolis region. So that one man's story may well have softened the area to be ready to receive Jesus. So there's a story. It's an example of the Gospels, and it's a sort of template. It's an example of what we see so often: Jesus leaving the many, going for the few, going for probably one of the sort of darkest places and experiences of life, and he moves there and he sees the power of God come. And I think this is what we should have in mind when we're hearing God say to us, he's calling us into deeper water, take more risk, move further out from the comfort of church, from the comfort of the gathered people. Yes, I'm not saying that we don't gather. It's vital that we do. This is the place and the people where we are encouraged, we're built up, we're resourced in prayer and the power of the Holy Spirit. But the energy and the leading of the Spirit is to go out to the edges. And in a minute, I'm going to give some examples of how we can do that this year. But first up, we're going to hear from Andy. He's going to tell us a story of from his time in Hong Kong, Philippines. Yes.
I'll be brief. Firstly, about going deeper, just a quick story from last week. I took my kids swimming last weekend, and they can't swim, but they're head cases. So they run to the deep end, and they threw themselves in. Sophie doesn't know this yet, but I'll tell her later. So I had to had to fish them back out and then take them back to the shallow end. And then I realized I've been spending the last 4 or 5 years enjoying the paddling pool, but too scared to actually go in the deep end. But actually, it was quite easy just following my kids because they're all in for the deep end. So I'm really excited for this year doing it. Probably about 9 years ago, Sophie and I moved to Hong Kong, and we thought that was us going into the deep end. It was deep. Like, I got there, we're living with some like drug addicts or murderers or whatever it be. And we also can't speak the language, and we're being mocked for it. And so I felt like so out of my depth. It was about after week one, I was like, can we go home? And then every day after that, it was, can we go home? And then like 2 weeks in, they said, oh, we forgot to tell you, in 4 weeks, you're actually not staying in Hong Kong. You're going to the Philippines for 2 months, and you'll be living in a slum. And we're like, oh, but we're already doing the deep bit. Like, what are you talking about? And in like Jackie Pullinger style, she said, you're not doing anything here. You're not helping anyone yet. You need to actually understand what it is to really see the poor. And so I was just even angrier and desperate to come home. It was like, so offensive. But we got on this flight, which actually felt really nice to be getting out of Hong Kong, because it's like living in central London, but times 10. So we're on a flight, and then we land at the Philippines, and I'm picturing beaches, lovely weather. The weather was actually, no, it was oppressively hot. But then we went over a bridge and immediately could just see, like, slums. I'd never seen anything like this. They drove us into the centre of a slum and said, out you get your bags out. We had forgotten you guys were coming, so we haven't got accommodation for you yet, but we'll see what we can do in the next couple of hours. So I was immediately like, I just want to go home. Like, and then it's the first time in my life I went to the toilet, said, so if I need the loo, I just cried. I was like, I just want to go home. And we did this for like 3 weeks, just cried, just wanted to come home because everything was so intense. Michael, can you put the picture up? It's very small. But basically, we'd gone into a slum area where the group that they were really going after was families that lived in tombs. So these guys had no houses. So that's a baby hanging up in their cot in a graveyard. And the families would tunnel under the tombs to live in them. That was it. That was all they had. We had to look at this for 3 weeks in a row. We'd go and meet these people. And all I wanted to do was come home. I was absolutely terrified, and still offended that being told that you don't know what poor is until you really see it. But I think what the excitement for us was, like, going deep was, yeah, for 3 weeks we just kind of pleaded with each other, can we go home? But then the following 5 weeks it was like, I can't believe we're going to have to go home. And when we actually left, we got in the back of the car to go to the airport and we wept for the opposite reason of, like, I don't want to leave these people. I don't want to go home. I don't want to go to Hong Kong. I don't want to do anything. We just want to stay here. And it was because of the people. Like, they had a really simple way of explaining it, of, like, you go in, when you go into the deep water, everything is overwhelming. But it's not when you just go after the one. Like, just go after the one person, the one thing. You go into this community with your eyes open. There's 100 people sleeping in tombs. Like, the baby caught my eye. So it was like, right, we're going to go and see how we can help the parents. Or do they need us to hold the baby so they get food? Or do they have any food? And then when you live that really simple life with Jesus, it was actually really easy to do. Because it didn't feel overwhelming. It didn't actually feel deep. And I think I've realized that we just overcomplicate deep. But actually, it was really simple. Like, we got to meet people. We were working with the people that lived in the slums. Like, they had nothing. I mean nothing. But these were, like, the nicest people we've ever met. And, like, yes, we sing happy birthday here. They celebrate birthdays, like, they're on steroids. It's like crazy. The whole party goes out, but they give away everything. So, like, the best birthday party I ever had was in the Philippines, where they do like karaoke in a slum and they buy a chicken and cook it for you. They can't afford a chicken for like their whole year's salary, but they give everything away. And that felt doable because we were just going after the one. And I think Sophie and I have been talking, and it sounds offensive, but we're really hungry to go deep again. It's hard when you've got kids. It's hard when life and work is stressful and everything is stressful. And it's impossible to do it on your own. But it's super exciting that as a church we can do it this year. And in really simple ways of just going after the one. And it also doesn't have to be you that goes after the one. You can just have the eyes and someone else can have the heart. So, like, we used to go into these areas and be like, I don't know why that's caught my eye. Or if it was me, it was like, that's caught my eye, but actually I can't deal with that because that's a group of 10 women. Has someone got a heart for it? or there's a baby, could someone go to it? So just, it doesn't have to be you're the doer. We don't have to do anything extreme. We don't have to be taking our whole families into the prison. But you could just have the eye and then share that, and then someone else will be the one that gets stirred up and excited and then gets to go and do it.
Thanks, Andy. Just had to say a little bit more about being out of our depth before I then mention some ways that we can engage with this practically, and then we'll finish by praying. So that I said at the beginning, I wonder if it's God's design for us to be out of our depth, and I just want to expand on that a little bit. And so last week, Charlie did a brilliant talk here about the Beatitudes, which I've never really, to be honest, I've never really understood. I've always found them a bit annoying because I didn't really sort of get them. For me, last week, he made them more clear than I've ever seen them. And he was essentially saying we are sort of raised and live in a way to kind of avoid pain and avoid suffering and avoid discomfort. And, you know, the Beatitudes say things like, blessed are those who mourn, blessed are those who are persecuted. And it sounds slightly strange, but the point that Charlie was making was that actually it's right that we feel sad in the face of death and suffering. It's inhuman for us not to. It's wrong, it's denial, it's avoidance. And he was talking about actually to be human, to be alive, to be real, is to recognize brokenness and suffering and to feel the pain of it. And yet we spend so much of our time trying to get into a place of comfort, trying to get out of difficulty, trying to get into a place of self-sufficiency. You see that right at the beginning in the Garden of Eden. Adam and Eve, you know, in that story which was written to show the human condition, they had everything. You know, they were right next to God, but yet there was something in them that just wanted to be able to sort of look after themselves without really needing God. And I think that's the story that you see. That's the pattern that you see throughout humanity, throughout the Bible, and throughout our lives, and throughout. We just want to be able to be, if I just have enough money or just enough comfort, or just if this just changes, then I'll be okay. And it's that, you know, it's this, and you can see that again through the Bible, the leading of God is taking people out of their comfort zones, into places of needing. And we always need God, but we don't always realize we do. And the problem is that we forget that we need God, and we sort of make life work, in whatever sort of way, in a way that we can get by without really needing to connect with God. And so Abraham leaves his family. He leaves his home for a different place. You know, Moses has to take his people out of Egypt into a different place. The disciples are called out of their little village life, their comfortable village life in the top left of Galilee, and they go around the world. Jesus sends the disciples and us as the church around the world. That's our calling, is to go to the edge, go to the most broken. And lovely hearing from Andy's story, wasn't it? When out of one's depth and when in that space of actually I just need God here, we find that actually I can swim. You know, it's okay that my feet don't touch the bottom of the ground. I'm not suddenly gonna get washed away. It's safe. It's like in the Narnia stories where Aslan is described. He's not a safe lion. He's not a tame lion, but he's good and he's kind. And I think that all speaks into this thing of being out of our depth in a right way, being out of our comfort zone, which actually is how we're designed to be. We're designed to need God. We're designed to live in relationship with God. So, just a few things that we could, a few ways that we can connect with this as a church and as individuals. And I know that people are already, so I'm not saying we're not doing any of this. If you're, you know, in that zone already, be encouraged for what you're doing. But we're looking at starting a prison Sunday once a month. So we work closely as a church with God's House, and Pastor Ossian goes into HMP Bristol, the prison behind Gloucester Road in Hawfield. He goes in there every day, actually, and runs services most Sundays. And we've been talking with him about us going in as a church once a month and running a service in Bristol Prison. And he's really excited about that. and it's a yes, I've got my security clearance. So we can go in as like teams of I don't know, maybe it's like six or eight. Typical format is they have a short 1 hour service, 10 to 11. Ossian seen over the last couple of years, numbers go up from 8 or 9 people coming to these services to now more like 40, 45. They love it. They love to sing. They love to hear a story and a message about Jesus. And then there's an opportunity to pray with people afterwards. So would you like to come? Let's form a team. You know, we considered a church, we considered like an evening service, and we've been scouting around that idea. And one of the conclusions on that was actually let's plant a service in the prison. Let's do that. That would be a healthy thing for us in line with our calling. It's going into deeper water. So speak to me if you're interested. Another opportunity is prophetic ministry to students, Bristol students. So I mentioned Liz earlier. And like Sam's here, isn't he? I saw Sam Whitlock somewhere. There he is. Sam's involved with this ministry to students, prophetic ministry to students in the universities. And again, that's an opportunity to be out of your depth in terms of needing God to speak. And Sam can tell stories about that. But that's another opportunity for us. Liz is keen that we grow in that area as well. And that's another one. As I said already, perhaps you're already in deep water. I'm looking at Rose. I'm thinking of some of the situations that Rose is in, and or in your personal life, or in other hope boats. In which case, you know, be encouraged. This is the heart of what you're doing. Is the heart of Jesus. And then my fourth suggestion was prayer support as well. So once a month on the Tuesday, the first Tuesday of each month, we have as our sort of prayer focused day. I join in with a slot that Simon and Becca host, which is praying for young people. We do that from like 6:45 to 7:30 in the morning, and I think having some other prayer slots that particularly accompany our boats and our ministries, I think would be a really useful and important feature. So if we're going into the prison once a month, let's have a corresponding prayer session for half an hour, 45 minutes before that, where we're praying for that. And I was thinking that Christy's not here today, he's been unwell, but Celebrate Recovery is a brilliant boat within Hope, brilliant ministry within Hope. And I was saying to Christy, it would be great if we could form a prayer slot within our Tuesdays where we pray for Celebrate Recovery. You know, names of people are confidential, but we can still pray for certain situations and we can pray for that. So if you'd like to be part of maybe like a half an hour or 45 minutes prayer for Celebrate Recovery each week, each month, then again, maybe it's not best. Maybe don't come and talk to me about all these things because I'll forget. Write it down on a bit of paper or email the office or whatever like that, you know. I'll let you take the initiative in the best way to make it happen, but do make it happen. And there'll be a myriad of probably other things as well. So my main takeaway, I think, for today is I think that we're called as humans, actually, not just Christians, it's humanity. I think we're designed to be out of our depth. I think we're designed to be in a place where we need God and we rely upon God. That's actually solid ground to be standing on. Ironically, that's the safest place. And there is this call we see in the Bible, and upon us as hope to go to the edge, to go to the vulnerable, go to the broken, moving away from the comfort and safety of our right community that is important for us. Not diminishing or dismissing that at all. We need this safe and secure home base, but from which we move out. Yeah, the four were prison Sunday, university students, prophetic prayer, the boat or life that you're in already, your work or personal life, and then the fourth one was prayer support, prayer. Mike is going to lead us in a song with a nice watery theme. We sung this, this song, Oceans is the song, and then Alice is going to lead us in some praying before we finish at 12:10. I remember we went through a really difficult time, maybe about 15 years ago, and I just sat in this song for months. It really spoke to me because it's the kind of, you call me out upon the waters. It's that call to, it uses the metaphor of Jesus inviting Peter out of the boat to walk on the water, and it's a slightly different watery situation to this one, but you get the concept's the same. It's about needing God. So Mike is going to lead us. If you'd like to stand or if you'd like to sit, use this as an opportunity to respond to what God's been stirring in you as we've been in the scriptures, as I've been speaking, as Andy's been speaking to us. And then Alice will close us in prayer.